Hello and welcome to the podcast of the Lotus Eaters for the 28th of June, 2021. I'm joined by Carl.
Hello.
And today we're going to be talking about Priti Patel's Rwandan Migrant Centre, which I'm looking forward to.
Can't say it without laughing. Okay, yep.
Yeah, going to be some good memes in that. Also, the fall of Matt Hancock. Couldn't have come soon enough. Nope. And also, the return of Trump, which is fantastic. It's like the return of the king there.
Yeah. And very much Lord of the Ring vibes coming from this, and that's good.
Anyway, some of the things I wanted to mention first. So first is the new epochs we have, Life of a Roman Legionary. I believe this is a thing you did with Beau, is that correct?
Yeah, this is amazing. So I was on holiday in the Isle of Wight, and I went to one of the English heritage sites that was a Roman villa that's on the Isle of Wight that was there for something like 500 years until the fall of Rome. And this in the gift shop, they were selling books, and there was one book by a professor of Roman history about what it was like to be a legionary. So I bought it and read it and thought, oh, this is great, because by the end of it, I was honestly persuaded that I wanted to join the Roman Legion. And
true to Caesar.
Well, I mean, it just made it sound like a really great life. I mean, he didn't include any of the catastrophic defeats the Romans suffered or anything, but it was really, really interesting to see the actual detail of the daily life of a Roman soldier and what they had to do, especially when they go out on campaign, because the dimensions of the Roman legionary camp, because it's the same camp every night, just in a different place, it's like a giant predatory city that moves around the landscape, just constructing itself in a couple of hours in each evening. And so you would just see this thing like advancing on your city that's not moving, and then it'd suddenly be, you know, legionaries around the bottom and then over the wall. So it's really, really interesting. Really, really, really great podcast. Really like this one.
I watch Historia Sevilla's talk about this stuff, and I always wondered what it looked like with the guys carrying like sections of the wall to keep it moving. Was it literally just guys holding up a section of the wall?
Each man had about an hour's worth of duty in the evening to construct the new camp, because you had, you know, 5,000 people.
Yeah, but when you're moving, like, you've got to bring the wall with you.
No, not all the time. I mean, you'd cut from local trees and things like this, if possible.
Huh, so. All right. Anyway, so go and check that out. There's also the new Contemplations, which went up, I think, Saturday, about the impact of social media on the individual. The fact that it's probably one of the worst things that's happened to humanity in a long time, let's be honest. And also the last thing here is a new article from Hugo about Nigeria and if Nigeria is coming apart. I don't know much about Nigeria, so I'm not going to comment, but go and give it a read.
Well, that's the point. The Hugo's got a degree in international politics, and so he's been doing these country profiles on countries that, again, we don't know much about. So it's actually a really good in-depth read about something otherwise that was a mystery to me.
Without further ado, let's get into Priti Patel's Rwandan Migrant Center. There's going to be so many memes about this. I look forward to people shouting. Anyway, so Priti Patel is proposing a Rwandan migrant centre, which is an amazing sentence I thought I'd never say. And to kick this off as to why this has come about, in case someone doesn't know, there's a video of yet more migrants coming over on the taxi force that is the British Border Force. There have been people sending me videos of this literally every day.
Yeah.
They keep sending me, hey, you guys should talk about this. And we have in the past, and this just keeps coming and keeps coming, so it's kind of, you know, drumming down on the fact that it keeps happening. But as you can see there, no women or children, all men.
Hasn't it got to something like 500 a day?
Ridiculous numbers. Well, we'll see the numbers in a minute.
Illegally crossing.
So if we go to the next link, Migration Watch does a fantastic job on this. Everyone should like them on Facebook, follow them, whatever you can, because they're great on this subject. But if we go to the first image, this is the numbers in which you're talking about, which is how many have been crossing per month.
Right.
So you can see here, between the years, 2018, not that long ago, basically nothing, but it started to become a problem in November, December.
Well, it started to become a problem in 2020.
But there we go. It started getting significant notice in those years.
Yeah, yeah.
And then 2019, 2020, and then Nigel Farage out there, all the rest of it. And, you know, we spoke about this, I think, last July 2020, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And look, it just keeps exploding. It just keeps getting bigger.
Yeah.
There's no stopping this.
And we've covered this previously, where it's just migrants from France, just...
Yeah, because I don't know, they're just all wearing garlic
country.
With their baguettes and their little berets jumping over. Yeah, that's what's happening. So Priti Patel has come up with the plans for the offshore migrant hub, which something about that phrase makes me laugh. So Priti Patel will introduce laws next week to enable the government to send asylum seekers abroad for processing as she opens talks with Denmark over sharing a center in Africa. So you come here on the channel. We'll send you to Africa, and we can be processed over there. And if you fail, oh, too bad. Enjoy your life. And if you succeed, then you can come back to Britain, and we will house you because you are a legitimate asylum seeker, which many are not. Many, many are not, particularly those getting over the border.
All of these people who are going are not, let's be honest. If you're a bunch of young men who are like, right, we're going to commandeer a dinghy in France, sailing out into the English Channel and try and reach Dover, That's not legitimate.
Yeah. I mean, we covered previously, there was a case in which, what was it, one guy died in the channel, and the media went out, oh no, a child has died in the channel, and then it turned out it was an adult who had stolen a dinghy and a couple of metal oars.
Yeah,
and then
shovels.
Him and his friends were like trying to shovel their way across the channel, and he shoveled it into his own dinghy, flattened it, and then drowned. And it was like, right, you guys are just morons. Like, I'm sorry, that's a Darwin Award.
It is a Darwin Award, and you're breaking the law. Mm.
So this comes from Denmark, as mentioned, and you can see here, Denmark orders Syrian refugees to go home. And there was a quote previously, I couldn't find it, in which the Danish Minister for Immigration gave a statement, I think it was the BBC or something, he was like, yes, I hope sending them all to Africa will stop them coming. like, it was so unbelievably just blunt. He was just like, nah, just sod off, I have no interest. Yeah. So if we go back to we go to the next one here, just something to mention, of the government data that is available for those getting across the channel, because I made a video on this a while back, I looked into it, the government says on their data, overwhelmingly those claiming to come by dinghy are Iranian. They are the ones claiming to do that. And The Guardian on the ground here also reporting that the people on the ground say that they're mostly Iranians. No war. You could be homosexual. Maybe that's why you want to flee Iran, in which case you could go to France. You could go to Germany.
Yeah, you'd be pretty safe in France or Germany.
They're not. Well, I suppose in Paris that's a different question, but in rural France you'd be all right.
Anyway. Yeah, in Normandy you should be fine.
Mm. So if we go to the next link here, this is back to the article. So they say the Nationality and Borders Bill, so this is the bill that she's been bigging up for a long time that we keep hearing about. She's apparently about to introduce it. So will include a provision to create an offshore immigration processing centre for asylum seekers for the first time. You remember previously she spoke about putting this in Gibraltar, which made no sense to anyone who's been to Gibraltar. There's no room. There's no room for even a house, never mind a migrant facility.
And what did the Gibraltans do to deserve this?
So Boris Johnson is said to be keen on the plan after the arrival in Britain this year of more than 5,600 migrants who have crossed the channel in small boats. The Times has learnt that the Home Office ministers and officials have discussed their proposals with their counterparts in Denmark, which passed its own law this month to process asylum seekers outside of Europe. And this is the thing. You remember, I think we spoke about this last time, that she was saying, if you come here via dinghy, if you come here through Europe, and we found out which country you come from, through Europe, we're deporting you back to that country in Europe. All of the European countries are like, no, we're just not going to take them. Like, we know this person's come from us, and we're just not going to take them because we know their chances as well. Mm. In which case, the guys in Denmark and now us have taken the approach, well, they're not going to take them, we'll send them to Africa. We'll find some African country that wants them, and we'll have them processed over there instead.
I can't stop laughing.
So then there's a question on the countries like, you know, Greece or Italy or France, like, oh, you want to criticize us for this, do you? Well, we offered to send them to you and you said no. So I mean, if you don't want them going there, you can always take them, don't worry. So it's a nice little trap as well.
That is
so the EU is like, oh, you can't do this, and it's like, yeah, okay, well, then take them back. No.
But we can pay someone else to deal with them.
So the Danish as well being the forefront of the policy of scare chances. So people who want to come there who are just chances, lying. Yeah. So you just scare them into leaving. So previously they just, what was it? They took belongings from the asylum seekers.
Yeah, anything over €1,000 in value.
Yeah. So this is another way of doing that. So Denmark is said to be planning to send asylum seekers to a centre in Rwanda. Two Danish ministers went to the Commonwealth country last month to sign a memorandum on asylum and immigration. A British government source said, we've had conversations to see what the Danes are doing.
I mean, it just sounds like a threat, doesn't it? We're going to send you to Rwanda.
Oh, man. I mean, I was expecting a hotel, 3 stars in Britain, and I'm in Rwanda.
It was 4 stars in Britain, actually.
Oh, jeez. The Home Office has also studied Australia's policy, which bans asylum seekers from travelling by sea and redirects them to an offshore immigration accommodation centres in neighbouring states such as Papua New Guinea. This is something everyone around the world has been looking at with envy, let's be honest, that the Australians have figured that question out. And it was the right thing to do, saved a lot of lives, because you don't have them making this, you know, unbelievably
perilous
treacherous
trip.
Yeah. So, fantastic. We want a version of that. Apparently, we weren't able to get one with sending them to St. Helena or something, which is a shame. And instead, we're going to follow the Danes to Rwanda. The bill's primary goal
is... St. Helena's tiny as well.
You can still build one camp there. It's better than Gibraltar.
I don't know if you can, actually.
I think you could. There's plenty of room.
There's not, that's the thing, but I'll talk about it.
Yeah, there is. Yeah, I've been on Google Earth, I can see that.
Yeah, but there's not, because it's all inaccessible rock. And you've got this one very small valley where the settlement is. I happen to know because I have ancestors who come from St. Helena.
What if we just bulldoze Napoleon's house and we use that?
Yeah.
So the bill's primary goal is to deport migrants who enter Britain illegally to the European countries through which they travelled. Ministers have failed, however, to achieve bilateral deals with any EU state, and talks with France, most important player, have been non-existent. The French won't even talk to us about the idea of sending them back to France because they clearly came from France.
Okay.
In which case, they're going to Rwanda. France, have you got anything to say about this? Zip. Nada. Because if they say it's wrong, well, then you can take them. Don't worry.
What's wrong with Rwanda?
So a government source gives a quote on all this, and they say, correctly, the numbers have a psychological and political impact that goes far beyond the actual numbers involved. The idea that people are coming, apparently at will, even if it's a relatively small proportion of immigration to the UK, doesn't exactly give the impression that we're in control, especially when people are washing up in dinghies. The only way to really tackle this problem is to tackle the pull factors, which is what the ideas around offshore processing and the presumption that if you cross illegally, then your asylum application are going to be treated less favourably than legal routes are about. Correct.
Very sensible.
You can argue that it's a small number of that compared to the national migration we get every year. Mm. Totally true. The amount of migration we get legally every year is still crazy, never mind illegal by other routes. And this is smaller, but it's a massively growing problem, and you need to curb that now.
Yes.
Because otherwise it will continue to be exponentially growing.
And fundamentally, there's simply no moral argument in favour of it. You're in a safe country, you're breaking the law, you're putting your own life at risk, and you're expecting it to become a burden on the British taxpayer.
Everything about this particular instance of illegal migration is wrong on every level, and that's why it has such a political will about it. I love the point the Home Office also makes about the fact that it shows they're not in control.
Yeah.
You aren't. It's a great point. I mean, even Tony Blair is able to make this point, that he says, if you want to be in charge of migration and make a positive case for it, then you need to show you control it. Mm. Tony Blair, so snake. But at the same time, he's completely correct.
Yeah.
So... This is also spurred on by Boris Johnson's apparent views on the topic, which are strong. So this is an article a while back in which it says Boris Johnson furious at Priti Patel over migrant channel crossing. And to be honest, most of the country is, because she keeps talking a big game but then isn't able to get the thing done.
Yeah.
As you mentioned with the French solution of sending them back to France, that's not been possible because the French aren't talking. So we're sending them to Rwanda. So in here it says, according to the source, Johnson told the minister, what the F is the Home Office doing when she... Patel going to sort this out. So him being extremely angry with her, rightfully, because the public are angry with her and the Home Office on this issue.
And therefore him.
Mm. I don't know what the legalities are of it, but every proposal she seems to bring forward, so the last one being, we'll just send them back to the EU country they came from.
Mm-hmm.
If the EU country just says no, well, then what you want to do legally? So we'll send them to Rwanda is the answer. So
if their government are prepared to be the recipient of the money that we're going to give them to process these applications, then what's the problem?
So the glorious Rwandan government is taking on us on this deal. But at the same time, Ho's mad, because Ho's always mad, ain't they? So here's the first Ho who is mad, Claudia Webb, MP. Not Labour MP.
Just want to point out that we're not actually besmirching Claudia Webb's honour in this case. We're not accusing her of actually being a Ho.
Oh, they'll besmirch her for being an idiot, though.
Oh, sure.
Like, you're like unbelievable idiot on a million things, but
She's a Labour MP, after all.
Yeah. The Tory government created an unaccountable, violent system to oppress, terrorise and imprison undocumented people and asylum seekers.
Then you'd think they'd stay home, right? If that was what's really happening, why would they come?
That's what they've already done. They're already terrorising these asylum seekers.
People are putting themselves at risk to get to this oppression.
And they're okay. I love it. I suppose there's
oppress me with a 4-star hotel, Daddy.
Some Priti Patel domination memes in there somewhere. So she continues with the biggest take of all. These are human beings who've escaped countries torn apart by the legacy of British colonialism and imperialism.
You mean countries that were created by British colonialism that didn't exist before?
But also they're coming from France, lady. I know Waterloo was a big L for the French, but I didn't realise we did that much damage to France. That the Battle of Waterloo has caused the situation that France is currently in. Our fault.
I love this. She's like, look, I'm going to condemn the British. Why? Because they've ruined France.
France, a bastion of everything up until Waterloo, and then it's just destroyed.
If it helps France, I view you as our equals and not our inferiors, unlike Claudia.
But I forgot at the same time, they were all Syrian migrants, though, Claudia. Remember? Remember how they're all fleeing the Syrian war, 100% of them? None of them are chanters. They're totally legitimate asylum seekers. Who was Syria owned by? It was owned by France. It wasn't owned by the British.
I love this story so much.
So, again, not us. Don't ask us to do anything. But also, as mentioned previously...
But the assumption underneath it is that basically Britain controls the entire world. Everyone in it lives at our expense and our pleasure. You know, it's we're the grand puppeteers, even though this was France and French colonies and nothing to do with us. Okay.
I love the, like, anti-British propaganda with, like, it's a spider that controls everything.
Basically, yeah. But they've got to make us out to be so ridiculously powerful.
Didn't even lift a finger. And we destroyed France and Syria in one go. With our colonialism. Anyway, so then the last point is also, as mentioned previously, they're all saying they're from Iran when they get here, off the dinghies. They're all ticking the Iranian box. In which case, Iran was never taken over by the British and turned into a protectorate.
Tangentially, you could claim it was, I suppose.
But then also by the Russians at the same time.
Sure.
Because they're invaded in the Second World War as well. Sure. In which case, this is the Russians' fault. I mean, it's just no thinking whatsoever. But I'm glad to know that Waterloo really did mess up France that bad.
Yeah, but Claudia Webb did tweet out a picture of European colonization of Africa with the caption, "This is what they were hiding from us." And it's like, Claudia, that's literally taught to every child in Britain when in secondary school. Yeah. Like, anyway.
As a point of pride. So then they have the next ho who is mad, Femi. Of course, Femi's mad. Priti Patel says, "We're going to start sending scared and desperate refugees to offshore camps where they'll be outside the reach of the UK's human rights protections. No, just no, this can't happen." They could just stay in France, Femi.
Mm.
Could just stay in France and wait for their asylum application to be accepted.
I mean, why are they desperate if they're living in France at the moment? Do they not have human rights protections in France, Femi?
It's almost like they've applied in France and they've been rejected for being
because
a liar.
Grifters?
I mean, take the case we spoke to previously about the guy who died in the Channel after being a dunce. He had applied for asylum in France. He was rejected. That's why he made the retarded trip to try and get on a boat with some shovels. That's why he did that. Because he was not a legitimate asylum seeker. It's that simple.
But Femi has defined him as scared and desperate.
From what?
From a lack of money.
Justice? Like, he's broken the law. He's broken into France. And he's like, "I want to go to Britain." And he's like, yeah, he's scared and desperate.
His Gibbs. That's why. Yeah, we're scared that he won't get his Gibbs.
He can go to the local centre for immigration and they will happily pay for a flight for him to go back. We do that in the UK. Voluntary deportation is a thing. We pay for it. Costs a lot of money. Anyway, also...
I'm worried about that now, I know about it.
Well, it's one way of getting rid of it. And one of the other points here is that he's like, "Oh, poor scared asylum seekers." Yeah, the last 7 terrorist incidents we've had in the UK, 3 of them have been asylum seekers. This is not to mention just like the example in Glasgow, in which one of them stabbed 2 people. I think he killed a police officer or something. Mm-hmm. And then we have the other examples of just community problems, all the rest of it, not to mention the money and all the rest of it, of fake asylum seekers. You know, there are a million things to say that we process you elsewhere, and if you're legitimate, then we bring you here, and, you know, we will take care of you.
It's not like ISIS weren't very public about the fact that they were going to be sending infiltrators with the refugees as well, but,
So there's also one more homad here, who's just funny. I don't know who this is, some verified checkmark. That's a cute way of saying concentration camp. Don't worry, Habibi. Because Denmark is doing all of this, and there, remember, what was it? Democratic Socialists? It'll be a Democratic Socialist concentration camp, so nothing to worry about there.
And it'll be run by black people in Rwanda as well. So it's not going to be white supremacy. So
don't worry about it. But that's just also really stupid. We go to the last one here. This is Ian Blackford whining, because of course he is. Patel's disgusting plan to hold migrants in offshore hubs sparks fury.
Why don't you volunteer your own house, Ian?
Yeah. You can take 5. I'm sure you got the bedrooms. If Priti Patel wants to send asylum seekers to Rwanda, she'll have a fight on her hands, not in our name.
What's wrong with Rwanda? You racist?
We could all send them to Scotland as well.
Yeah. But is it because they're black in Rwanda? Is that why you have a problem with them? Yeah. And I really want to know. I really want your answer on this, because I can't see any other reason that you would have a problem with Rwanda.
Not at all. So we go to the next one. This is just Andrew Bridgen, who I quite appreciate, actually, as a Conservative MP. He's doing some good stuff. I've seen him giving interviews to alternative media a lot as well, which is great. We should reach out to him to get him. Anyway, so he says, "We need to deter illegal immigrants from falling into the hands of unscrupulous people traffickers. Offshore assessment centres will act as a deterrent and end this miserable trade." Yes. While protecting the rights of genuine qualifying victims seeking asylum.
Because it's important to note that the genuine qualifying victims will apply through the bureaucracy and be accepted and then be given tickets to a flight. And they won't have to go across the English Channel on a dinghy.
Because it's demonstrable. Yes. Like when someone applies who is a legitimate asylum seeker who deserves everything we can give them to get them here safely, you will know. And you will feel very much sympathy for them instead of hatred in the example of those trying to cross in dinghies because Gibbs.
Hmm.
And as an example of this, I just, well, you know, if you want to see someone who's not taking the piss, if you go to the next link here, this is the interview Josh did with Ji-Yun Park, who is a defector from North Korea, who was in China and they managed to get her out and then she's now in the UK. And you watch something like that, and this is why this gets me so mad, because you can look at these guys, these chancers who just want to come across because Gibbs. And then you look at a genuine asylum seeker, as Andrew was talking out, the difference is day and night. The interviews you've seen, as on the Moroccan border with the guys trying to break into Spanish territory, what did they say? There's no jobs in Morocco, so I'm going to Spain.
It's not how this works.
Not her circumstance.
Yeah.
You know, compare what she went through to Gibbs' job. It's no, there is no debate. So go and sign up for lotusseeds.com to go and see that, because that's premium and it's totally worth your time.
What she went through is horrific as well. Just to be clear, like I've only had the sort of overview of it, and already it's just like, right, okay, it's too much.
But then you just, you know, you look at that and then you look at these chancers and it's just like, right, that's why everyone hates the chancers. It's not because, ooh, I hate immigrants or I hate asylum seekers or something like this. No, I hate liars. I hate people who are trying to take advantage of our system. And you know what they're doing as well? They are taking a place of someone like that. They are taking a place of someone genuine who deserves our, you know, our resources, help. To be honest. You know, we will spend treasure to try and to defend some people who really need the help. And when people take advantage of that and take their space instead, to hell with them. Absolutely to hell with them. So I hope they enjoy their stay in Rwanda.
Who's the guy in charge of Rwanda?
I can't remember his name, but he was involved in the genocide.
In what way?
Well, I think he's a Tutsi, so he was on the side that was getting genocided and then did some reprisals, because that's how it works. So he's also an oppressed genocider, so it's like the black guy killing white guys in the United States. Therefore, it's moral in the SJW worldview.
Right. Very interesting. Good to know. Anyway, it's time for us to talk about the fall of Matt Hancock, which I have to say can't have come too soon. For the wrong reasons, to be honest, in my opinion, but I'm not a fan of Matt Hancock, so I'll take it. So the first thing, I think, is who is Matt Hancock? And he's a really annoying, weird guy who for some reason is a Conservative MP for Sussex, and for some reason is given a position in Boris's cabinet. For some reason, because he just seems to be a complete... The term mediocrity rarely has a sort of human avatar until the creation of Matt Hancock. And somehow he ended up being the person in charge of the British coronavirus response because he was the health secretary for the United Kingdom.
Which, you know, usually isn't a terribly important job, but...
not normally.
Last couple of years.
Yeah, it's been mad. But he's really weird. And so there have just been really weird examples of him. If you can scroll down on this one, John, you see him standing next to a woman with what appears to be an obvious erection as he's standing just really close to her, looking at her in a really bizarre way and obviously making her feel very inappropriate.
Do you have the clip of this?
I didn't get the clip
of this. Right, so for people who haven't seen it, like, she starts talking to the camera like you would, and he stood next to her, and while she's talking for a good long time, he just stood next to her really close to her.
It's just really weird. It's just like, okay, has this man just been discovered in a jungle, and this is his first experience of seeing what a woman looks like?
Yeah, so people were redubbed it, being like, Matt Hancock meets a woman.
that's what it looked like. And so if you go to the next one, John, there's another one where it's, for some reason, he was walking. If you scroll down on this one, you can see, there's that one where he sits like Woody in Toy Story, where he gets up at the parliamentary bench, he gives a speech, and then he sits down, but his legs are straight as if they've been locked, and so they're just sat off the floor. It's like, Matt, why don't you bend your knees? Like, he looks like the bug in Edgar the Bug in Men in Black, like he's being puppeteered by an alien or something. Knees are meant to bend when one sits, right, okay. And he just keeps doing this strange stuff, and then if you go down, he's like walking along like he's a zombie in a zombie apocalypse. And it's like, I mean, I don't even know if he knew he was being filmed, that's the thing. Like, none of this seems to be, like, deliberate. It all seems to be just him being really weird. And so, right, enough of Matt Hancock's weirdness. Let's go on to him crying about the first COVID vaccination. I hated this so much. So he was on Good Morning Britain in December 2020 because some chap called William Shakespeare had been the first person to have got his second dose or first dose of COVID-19 vaccine. And Matt Hancock tried to make it look like he was being sincere, but there was so obviously a liar's smile coming out of his face. He was like, oh, I'm weeping, as he's got this huge grin on his face. Like, Matt, no one believes you were weeping. Everyone knows that you're lying to our faces. You could have just kept a straight face, but for some reason, he was just so overjoyed that he had to pretend like he was crying, brought to tears. And it was just embarrassing, and everyone was like, Matt, shut up. You know, you're literally the incompetent kid in school.
I mean, the only side of this I could take is probably that he's so weird when he doesn't think the cameras are on. When the cameras are on, I imagine he's also just that weird.
Well, it's just such a strange thing where, I mean, it just seemed to be like a discussion in the office. It's like, okay, right, if you go out there and show some tears on TV, people will think that this was a really important thing and it will be significant, of narrative significance, that William Shakespeare first got the vaccine. And he just couldn't pull it off because he's useless.
He might just be that autistic as well. That's another thing that might be true.
Could be. But anyway, the point is, The UK's coronavirus response was essentially Matt Hancock's creation. The lockdowns, the way things were enforced, the way all this was done, basically Hancock's creation. And so when he's there saying, right, okay, you're all going to have to stay inside, you're not allowed to, you know, go outside and meet with other households, you're not allowed to have relations with someone you do not live with, well, Matt Hancock was caught having relations with someone he did not live with. He's been married for 15 years as well, which isn't good. But the thing is, as well, the worst part about this, can we play the video with the sound off just so we can see, like, again, like Matt Hancock, he looks like he's being puppeteered, right? His behavior, this is so weird. Let's close the door here. And then if it wasn't Matt Hancock, I would say this was a setup. Right? Because no one else acts in such a wooden way. And, you know, she just comes in off camera and then they're having this weird kiss that, you know, is grossing me out. But if it wasn't him, Jesus. I would say that this is put on.
His hair.
Well, yeah, good question. I think it's just the light reflection or something. Okay. But like I said, if it wasn't him, I would think this had been put on because he's acting so weird and woodenly, right? But okay, enough of seeing Matt Hancock being, like, trying to be a human.
like, even when he thinks the cameras are off, that's what I mean. He's still such a mess.
Yeah, exactly. But exactly. It's so weird. So anyway, the son broke that he had been having a secret affair with his closest aide. This is all going to be disgusting rumor mill nonsense that we're going to have to talk about now. Enjoy. But he cheated on his wife with Gina Colodangelo, who he hired last year with taxpayers' money, say the son. It's like, yes, the son, of course he used taxpayer money. If he used private money from, like, Russia or something, I think it'd be a bit more of a scandal. You know, of course he's using taxpayer money, the son. But the point is, he hired this lady as his assistant, and some unknown person had put a secret camera in a cabinet member's office. And, of course, caught this. Nobody seems that concerned about the fact that in cabinet members' offices, there are secret cameras being put up and then being leaked by unknown agents to the Sun to ruin the careers, incidentally, of cabinet members. Again, I don't complain in this instance because I hate Matt Hancock, but in other respects, this might be considered to be bad. Like, if you're concerned about the integrity and secrecy of government operations from foreign agents, you might have a concern about this, but
If it's anyone but Boris Johnson that's been putting these up, then that... Because if it's anyone else, then it's security breach. If it's the Prime Minister doing it, so he's got dirt on his cabinet colleagues, then that might be a reason. I mean, still creepy as hell, but anyone else, I mean, yeah, you're right. That's a massive security breach.
It's wild that someone put a secret camera in a cabinet member's office. I mean, who knows? This is like the least damaging interpretation of that. Oh, we caught Matt Hancock having an affair. I actually don't care that Matt Hancock had an affair. I care that, like, you know, it could be anyone who gets access to what's happening in our government.
Because I saw a rumor that he was complaining that China might have done this, released it.
Maybe.
But then I have to wonder if you did have those kind of cameras and then you could send that stuff to the CCP. I mean, they could do a lot of damage.
Sure. But why, you know, how did this happen? But anyway, he was seen kissing her at the Department of Health's London HQ during office hours. This is in his office.
The important thing here for people who are foreign and might not know is whilst he was doing this as well, it was the period in which you could not even go and see someone from another house or do anything.
As I said, he was forbidden to have relations from someone you didn't.
He was breaking
with
the rules there.
Of course, yes, that's the point.
And the moral point also being he's cheating on his wife.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is a sin.
If we go on to the next one, which is our reporting on this, he admits that he broke his own rules, you know, obviously, which is, I guess, the most important thing.
I mentioned the sin thing because I don't know if you saw, there was a guy on, I think it was GB News this morning from the Church of England, a bishop, being like, yeah, well, it's really unfortunate that he broke the rules. I don't much care about the adultery. I'm like, you're a bishop.
Yeah, how do you not
care
about
it? It's the sixth commandment.
But that's the point, isn't it? You know, like, anyway. Matt said he'd let people down. It's like, really? You think? I mean, you were only imposing some sort of extreme COVID Sharia on the entire country, and then you decided to cheat on your wife in the middle of it, Neil Ferguson style. So yes, I've decided that this is a terrible, terrible plague and we're all going to die. We almost social distance. Except for me. I'm not going to social distance. So anyway, yeah, this was during the spread of the so-called Delta Plus strain last month. He said he had let people down and some of these things. He said he would remain focused on dealing with the pandemic after he had accepted he had breached the social distancing guidance. Yes, I suppose you did. But the thing is, this, as I said, this happened with Neil Ferguson. And of course, he decided that what he was going to do was just try and ride it out. And we covered this a bit last week, because it was like, okay, well, if these things go on for like 5 days or more, then they essentially get dropped.
We spoke about it. Apparently, there was a rule. I've got a politics textbook in which it's mentioned that, what was the guy? Alistair Campbell, the spin doctor for Tony Blair, had said that if the corporate press complains for 5 days, then the correct thing to do is the Prime Minister to boot the minister. So that was the rule in the textbook.
And so one of the things that's interesting about that is the fact that Boris didn't kick him immediately, because this isn't exactly good. But anyway, so pressure then grew on him to quit on the 25th, as The Guardian reports. And Hancock said, I accept I breached the social distancing guideline in these circumstances. I've let people down. I'm very sorry. I remain focused on working to get this country out of the pandemic. Would be grateful for privacy on my family for this for my family on this personal matter. I don't think you can.
No honour.
Really. Yeah, don't think you can. I mean, at the end of the day, Matt, you may well have been spreading COVID yourself. And so,
I mean, it is his aide that he's working with probably every day, so it's unlikely. But even then, just no honour of the man. Just resign immediately. Yeah.
But Boris had accepted his apology for breaking the rules and considered the matter closed. It's like, yeah, Boris would say that, because it's not like his own personal love life is replete with glorious works and honour. So, yeah, as I said, Matt had been married to his wife 15 years, and this looks pretty bad. For some reason, The Guardian have given us the results of a Snap YouGov poll, which I put no stock in, but 49% of those surveyed thought Hancock should step down, up from 36% in May. So at least a third of the public were like, yeah, we hate Matt Hancock. Hancock then resigned. He put out a personal letter that for some reason Piers Morgan broke. Don't know why. But mostly waffle about how hard he worked. Maybe I'm not gonna say he didn't. I'm going to say I found his work to be tyrannical and oppressive and disproportionate to the problem. And the fact that he broke those rules is pretty bad as well. But he says, I apologize to my family and for my loved ones for putting them through this. I also need to be with my children at this time. You got a sus face on. What's going on?
Didn't he go home and then just leave?
We'll talk about that in a second.
But just, I need to be with my children. But nah.
Yes, I'd like to be with my family. Yes, well, a lot of men who are going to get divorced in the near future would like to be with their family too. Not always an option, given the way that the legal system works. But then, of course, he put out his tweet of resignation, which basically said exactly the same thing. He spends a lot of time trying to validate his choices with the work he had done during the pandemic. But the thing is, Matt, I don't think the work you did during the pandemic was good, so you can't really appeal to that. But anyway, what the funniest response to this, for some reason, was a Right Said Fred dunking on them. Like, for some reason, the band, the 90s band, the 90s gay band, Right Said Fred, say, you were a fake, a liar, a cheat, and the poster boy for the World Economic Forum. Who on earth would want to be you? From Right Said Fred, Matt. And I agree with them too. That's the most salient statement about that anyone has ever made about Matt Hancock. And it was by Right Said Fred, interestingly. So anyway, Sajid Javid has been introduced to replace him, which is a good choice, to be honest. I quite like Sajid, which obviously outraged all the right people. First being Britain's own Alcibiades. What?
You haven't seen him talking about BLM?
No, what did he say?
It's cringe.
Oh, was it?
Like, after the verdict was given in the Chauvin trial, he tweeted out, what is it? Justice, Black Lives Matter, and then just all caps with, like, the hashtag as well. And it was just like,
God, I wish the Conservatives would stay off social media.
Yeah.
But anyway, so what I found really interesting about the Sky News report about this is that they put Britain's own Alcibiades as a more important source than the Labour shadow health secretary. As in, Dominic Cummings got higher billing in this article than Jonathan Ashworth. As in, yes, we know that you're the opposition's shadow health secretary, and I'm sure that's important.
But you're not very relevant.
But yeah, exactly. But Dominic Cummings is tweeting about this, and that's way more important for people to hear. So... I'm not even joking.
Look, you're only a shadow minister.
Yeah, exactly. You're only the person assigned by the Labour Party. Who cares about them? Cummings suggested that Johnson's wife, Carrie Simmons, played a role in the decision to hire Javid as the new health secretary. He tweets, so Carrie appoints Saj. No, if I hadn't tricked the PM into firing Saj, we'd have had HMT with useless SOS/SPADs, no furlough scheme, total chaos instead of the joint 10-11 team, which was a big success. So taking credit, basically, for what's happened, using a bunch of insider talk that I can't really understand.
No.
So I don't know what all of those acronyms are.
He's been releasing things showing Hancock to be a waste of space.
Yes.
For the last like month or two as well.
Yeah, it's been great. Boris called him effing useless.
In a private chat.
Got leaked. Private WhatsApp chat. Got leaked. Because it was true. So anyway, yeah, Jonathan Ashworth, whoever that guy is, said Sajid Javid failed to reverse the previous 8 years of social cuts or deliver the NHS investment, blah, blah, Labour talking points. That's why you came lower than Dominic Cummings. And Dominic Cummings was speaking purely to insiders there. But anyway, so Sajid has come in and said, well, look, my priority is just getting back to normal, because that's a good priority. He literally just wants to get us out of the lockdown, which I hope he's being serious about. But right, so moving on from that, let's get back onto it. Hancock then decided to rush home on the Thursday when this broke and leave his wife.
Right, was that before or after it leaked? Like, did the leaker
before
give him...
Before it leaked.
So the leaker gave him a note saying, we're going to leak this from the Sun.
The grapevine...
You have 3 hours.
The internal grapevine, exactly. The Sun will take X amount of hours to publish this, so you've got this amount of window to go home.
Would you like to comment as well?
Probably something like that, yeah. So this is, of course, all based on salacious gossip, because it's The Mirror, and that's why we're going to cover it, because it's funny. I love the way they frame things up. Disgraced Matt Hancock, correct, has left his wife Martha, reportedly telling her he was leaving after realising his kiss with an aide was about to be revealed. What an awful afternoon his wife must have been having. She's probably pottering around having a perfectly normal day. Matt Hancock bursts the door and says, all right, darling. Yeah, I'm breaking up with you because it's about to be a national scandal because I was kissing my secretary. She's like, what?
I'm just cleaning the dishes. You put the kids to bed. Yeah. I'm divorcing you because I'm cheating on you. Bye. Just leaves.
Yeah, because he bursts in breathlessly, right? Hancock even reportedly woke up their youngest child, who is 8, to say that he was leaving. What an awful human being.
To go and get milk or something. Like.
Daddy's
going to go buy cigarettes. I'll be back soon.
Yeah, so, yeah, exactly. Sorry, Tommy. There's about to be a huge political scandal. I'm leaving you and your mum. Bye. What an absolute piece of crap Matt Hancock is here, right? And again, there's one thing doing this, and there's a moral fault in doing this, but there's also the moral fault in the way he's handling this, which is to try and get ahead of a political scandal. It's like, look, no one is going to be on your side at the end of this, Matt. There's no point, like, traumatizing your children and your wife over this. But, I mean, it's not going to save you, but of course he thought it would.
Is it better for them to hear it from him or to hear it from the Sun?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
Because the only reason he's telling his wife and family is because of the Sun. Because this is all about to go public and I'm about to be public enemy number one. So you may as well know I'm a filthy cheat and our marriage is over. And the thing is, right, Martha apparently thought their marriage was happy and stable.
Quote from her?
Yeah.
Ah, that sucks.
And, like, so the kids are in bed, the wife's just doing wifely things, and Matt Hancock's like, yeah, so I've ruined everything because I'm a prick. Bye. And so that's it. Because apparently now he's in love with Gina. He's decided, oh, no, this is a fairy tale romance. We can go to the next one. Hancock and aide Gina are apparently said to be serious about their relationship. Are they? What? Okay. If you say so, Matt. I mean, I don't really care, but like...
When did it start? That's the next question I've got.
Well, 6 weeks ago.
It's not serious. No, this is the stress of the job.
Mm.
And that's your
That's what it looks like, isn't it? Yeah, so 6 weeks ago, they began their affair.
You've just ruined your life.
You've just ruined your life and your wife's life and your children's lives over this. I mean, if you'd come out and said, you know what, I made a mistake, I shouldn't have done that, maybe my wife will take me back or something.
Yeah, I'm retiring from politics.
But... retiring from politics, whatever it is, you know, like, you know, you could have salvaged your 15-year relationship with your wife and your, you know, being the father of your children.
I mean, you could have blamed it on the job, being like, you know, this has destroyed my mental thinking or whatever.
Yeah. You could have had any amount of excuses that would have led to a less humiliating result than this. And so, yeah, I mean, she's obviously going to be leaving her husband because she's married. And
Gina.
Gina's married, yeah, to someone that Hancock employs. It's just awful, isn't it? So it's why it's so funny. Imagine being the husband, like, I can't believe she left me for Matt fucking Hancock.
Well, have you seen a picture of the husband?
Yeah, he's a nerd as well, obviously.
He looks like a cuck.
Yeah, he does. But Matt Hancock is not exactly Chad McChadison, is he, right? So it's just like, I've lost my wife.
He's got more power than me. He can stop everyone going to the pub and stop them procreating. I can't do that.
Yeah, that's true. But I mean, you have just lost...
Imam Hancock over here.
You have just lost your wife to a human skin that's being puppeteered by a bug alien. So... yeah. You know, anyway, so apparently he's expected to set up home with Miss Colin D'Angelo. And apparently, yeah, his wife was totally clueless about this. So, right, okay.
Oh, you got to feel bad for her, yeah.
Yeah, but this is just mad. But anyway, so the interesting thing really that comes out of all of this, the fact that he turns out he's facing an investigation because he was using his personal email account, Hillary Clinton style, to deal with the pandemic rather than his official one, which means the government doesn't hold any records, or many records, of his PPE contract dealings. So he could have been taking lots of money through the back door and the government won't know because it's all in his private emails.
Can you not subpoena Google for that?
Oh, I imagine they probably could and probably should.
I don't know how that's going to work out then.
No, me either, but presumably not great.
I did see the police in response to being asked about whether or not he'd broken COVID rules and therefore would they investigate him. Mm. The police responded with no because it was retrospect. It was like, all crime is retrospect.
Yeah, you very rarely catch people in the act. But, yeah, so good to know that the camera has been disabled.
But not the one in the men's loo, that's still...
but apparently it's been turned off, and a probe has begun to find out who leaked the footage. And I can't help but ask, why is there a secret CCTV camera in the office of one of the cabinet members? Who has access to it?
Like... are they saying it's a secret camera or not?
Yes. Well, yeah, Matt obviously didn't know it was there, did he?
Well, they just say CCTV camera here. Yeah. I mean, are there just cameras in everyone's office staring at them and then...
But there can't be. You can't have CCTV cameras in, like, Boris Johnson's office.
God, it'd be a fantastic stream, wouldn't it?
It would be amazing, but that's the problem. It would be a fantastic stream and all of China would be very interested in watching it, no doubt. Right? You can't have that. You can't have... I mean, that's...
Sure.
That's ridiculous, yeah. Right? The vulnerability that this opens up our government to is mad. And it's like, okay, so it's been disabled but not removed. That's weird. Again, is Boris the one watching these cameras?
Just eating popcorn.
Why not? But then this doesn't exactly... it doesn't exactly buck a trend of general incompetence from the British government. And again, this is why I'm all for small government, because the less that the government does, the less they can screw up. Because apparently classified Ministry of Defence documents were just found at a bus stop.
Yeah, this happens on occasion.
It does, yeah. A bunch of times. In fact, the
last time I think it was on a tube.
The Westminster pedo investigation went missing on the tube, didn't it?
Oh, really?
Yeah, really weird. Just the document, the one only document about the investigation of the pedophile ring at Westminster that apparently doesn't exist. The document just went missing, so we'll never know. Weird. Just really weird. But yeah, so these were classified Ministry of Defence documents about HMS Defender and British military have been found at the bus stop in Kent, as you do. One of the set of documents discusses the likely Russian reaction to the ship's passage through the Ukrainian water of the Crimean coast on Wednesday. Remember when they shot at us and we said they didn't shoot at us? You know, the international incident that may trigger a war with Russia? Just leave those documents at the bus stop.
Why is it in Kent?
Don't know. Good question.
Ministry of Defence is in London.
Yeah, I know. I'm not... I mean, Kent's relatively close to London. So
someone's busing in?
Yeah, obviously. that's what I would have assumed. But apparently the MOD is investigating...
Sorry, who in the department is taking a bus to London every day?
Well, I imagine there are probably quite a few people. But
I imagine they drive. If you've got a job that important, they're going to pay you a lot.
More importantly, why are they using dossiers of documents like this is the 1980s? Like, what are you doing?
Might be safer on paper, I don't know.
Obviously not. It's left in bus stops.
Everything on the cloud's already owned by the Russians and the Chinese anyway, so...
Exactly, but at least you can encrypt it.
Yeah,
okay. But anyway, so yeah, that's the general... some say sus. Yeah, well, that's the point, isn't it? You know, it all looks quite sus. I would very, very, very much like to know who put the camera there, but we don't know. So that's all we have. And I suppose for the last one, we'll talk about the glorious return of the Golden God Emperor, Donald Trump. Basically, well, there was a great deal of fanfare. Not as many trumpets as I would have liked, but good enough, I suppose. So I watched most of the rally. Honestly, it wasn't great quality because, well, for reasons we'll talk about, but it was generally fine. Could have been better in some parts, but the last 20 minutes were absolute fire, and that means that we probably can't show very much of it because of YouTube's editorial policies and Facebook's editorial policies. Facebook, you may remember, recently took down a recording of Donald Trump because it was his voice. So... don't know where that leaves us, to be honest, when it comes to that. So what we'll do is we'll just use some of the coverage of the campaign, event that was in Ohio and was incredibly well attended, as you can see by just looking at the pictures. There was a massive, like with all of his rallies, a massive overflow crowd in the car park. But yeah, anyway, so as the Telegraph point out, he mocked woke generals, critical race theory, and said that Biden was destroying the nation. He's actually got a great quote here. After just 5 months, the Biden administration is already a complete and total catastrophe. Crime is surging, murders are soaring, police departments are being gutted, illegal aliens are overrunning our borders. Joe Biden is destroying our nation right before our own very own eyes. How is that not correct?
True. I mean, just fact check all of that. True.
All of that is exactly. No one has been screeching about fact checks on social media because of this, because there is no debating that statement. That is a true statement. Of course, the comments were greeted with roars of approval. The Biden administration issued new rules pushing twisted critical race theory into classrooms across the nation and also into our military, referring, of course, to the woke general. Our generals and admirals are now focused more on this nonsense than they are on our enemies. Seeing these generals lately on television, they are woke. He was referring to General Mark Milley, who came out and said, yes.
All white people are evil.
Oh, I do want to understand white rage. I've read Mao and Marx, and now I'm on to reading about white rage. And I'm not a communist.
It was worse than that. He said, I read Mao and Marx, therefore, and you know, that doesn't make me a communist. True. And he said, so that's why I want to understand why white rage caused people to storm the Capitol?
Yes.
So, right. You read Mao and Marx, but you weren't saying, I just want to understand why the proletariat haven't risen up yet.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't just that you've read the wokers' nonsense.
You've taken on the axioms. Framing.
Yeah.
And that's exactly right. So, you know, he is essentially legitimizing critical race theory while claiming not to be someone who endorses critical race theory, which is an obvious contradiction. So there's a lot of stuff in Trump's speech that we can't really say, but did we get any clips of interest or anything like that?
Yeah, so I found a few clips that were circulating around that were quite good. So this one here, just showing the size of the crowd, so you can just see the storms of people. I mean, I saw some people at the very back as well trying to take pictures of the front. You couldn't really see. So, I mean, just isn't that interesting? Most popular man in America can't get 12 people in a basement, but this guy can get storms of
folks. And this is just the overflow as well. That's just tens of thousands of people who couldn't get in to see him. And so we'll sit outside and watch a TV screen.
I mean, come on. Like, this is the most interesting man in America right now. It's certainly not ye olde president. So then he went on to read the snake poem. He apparently got loads of requests to do this.
He's done this a bunch of times as well.
Yeah, apparently the people organizing this were just like, come on, you got to do the snake poem. You got to do the snake poem. So he did. I absolutely love, like, I hadn't heard the full thing without, like, meme music behind it. So just the fact that he says it has to do with the border.
You foolish woman, you knew I was knew damn well I was a snake when you took me in.
So the woman comes across the snake and the snake's like, take me in, oh tender woman, said the vicious snake. And then the snake gives her a vicious bite and he says, shut up, silly woman, the reptile said with a grin. You knew damn well I was a snake before you took me in. It's just such a good snake. Like, I'd never imagine a president being able to make, like, poems into policy. But it worked and it's still good. So then there's also the clip of him talking about critical race theory that was also online. And I like Mythicist Informed doing this, not Milwaukee anymore. I think they've changed that. So
right,
just made that clear. But he says on here that the Biden administration is pushing new rules, pushing twisted critical race theory into our classrooms and into our military. You see the generals on TV, they're woke. I knew some of these guys, boy, they changed quickly. They went to the other side.
Ooh.
Because Millie, of course, is someone he knew on a personal basis. I think there was a falling out with him and General Mattis over this issue as well, in which Millie being around, he didn't want him around. And Millie quickly changed sides, didn't he? So,
and I love all the memes of him with pink hair and the LGBT thing going, you know, I'm offended by that. Because he literally says it's offensive.
Do? What's he going to do, though? Say that's bad, you can't do that? Yeah, like, you can't show me with all the trans rights lay?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he literally said that it was offensive. It's like, look, the US general's actually going, oh, that's offensive. Like, why are you using the word offensive? The only time you should use the word offensive is when literally you're invading Russia.
Like we have one war on at the moment, full-time for the United States. It's in Afghanistan against the Taliban, who murder women for going to school.
And that's been going on for over 20 years now.
Yeah.
I mean, like, if you want an offensive, how about you go and offensive those people? Like, it shouldn't there be, you only use the word offensive when you're invading a country, for the love of God.
So the next clip of interest here that I found was just him talking about how the nation belongs to you. So he says in here, this country does not belong to them. It belongs to the American people. And our magnificent American liberty is your God-given right. The people of this land will not be ruled and talked down to by corrupt politicians, petty tyrants, socialist bullies, or left-wing bureaucrats in a place called Washington, D.C. I just love the way he talks and all the rest of it. I never got enough time to really watch his full riffs. So, I mean, even just this is fantastic.
But I mean, he is right, and I despise the Democrat narrative around January the 6th, primarily because they set up government as being sacred, which, of course, it isn't. That's the point of the American project.
Washington, D.C.
Exactly. The point of the American project is that government is not sacred. It is not, you know, divinely ordained, and it is a construct of the people. And Trump is hitting that note exactly right. And Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi and AOC, they were like, oh, our holy house of democracy, it's like, then you can keep it. You know, I'm not in favor of whatever it is you're constructing here.
Like, after having to listen to these morons and then just looking at one Trump speech, it really is like a golden light on the situation.
Nostalgia is the best thing.
I mean, it is sort of like looking at him like he shouldn't really exist, because you know he's gone, but he's not gone. So then there's the next one here, so him saying I told you so, because of course just after 5 months the Biden administration is already a complete and total catastrophe. I told you. And then crime is surging, so on and so forth. But I love this point. Crime is surging, murder is soaring, police departments are being gutted, illegal aliens are overrunning their borders. Nobody has ever seen anything like it. Our poor borders, they were so perfect, they were so good.
I mean, I don't want to be the guy who says, okay, well, if they were so perfect, why do you need to build a wall? But he is right that there is a problem.
It's the way he talks. It's not an incoherent mess of the water of the Liberty Tree or whatever the hell Joe Biden tried to say. Yeah, it's like, the borders were so perfect. They were so good. They were huge.
At least he knows what he wants to say. That's the thing. Like, Joe Biden interrupts himself halfway through sentences because he fails to remember what the end of the sentence is meant to be when he's quoting something else. What was the all men and women, you know, the thing? It's like, what, created equal? You know, Joe, is that what you're trying to say? You know, are you a politician, aren't you, Joe? But I love the next one, though, about the media. Do you miss me? They miss me. They look at their bad ratings and they're saying, we miss this guy. And the thing is, the ratings of CNN and MSNBC are flatlined. Absolute catastrophe. So they definitely do miss Donald Trump. But what's interesting, though, is that the three major networks in America didn't broadcast this speech. Why do you think that is?
When you say three major, Fox not?
Fox, CNN, and MSNBC did not broadcast this.
Oh, that's a slight. That's a horrible slight from Fox.
And he calls it out during the thing. He says, you know, Fox, they haven't been so great lately, have they? So I love the way he just slides it. They haven't been so great lately. Well, if they're not going to broadcast one of your comeback rallies, then obviously not.
All praise to Newsmax then for putting it out. I mean, I never thought I'd be saying that, but...
Well, C-SPAN also broadcast this. A few of the other ones, One American News Network, Newsmax, did. But for some reason, Fox, CNN, and MSNBC had more important things to do. So Fox stayed with their lineup of Waters World and Justice with Judge Jeanine. More important than Donald Trump. CNN had an interview with former Vice President Al Gore. Very much more important than Donald Trump. And MSNBC had The Week with Joshua Johnson. don't know who they are. But good news is that Trump has apparently joined a Rumble. He apparently has an official verified Rumble account, which is a good start because, and I've said this right from the very beginning, Trump should have been doing everything he could to build up competitors to Silicon Valley social media sites. Rumble, of course, being one of them. He should have done the same with Parler, with Gab, with all of the others, especially those ones that can't be deplatformed by Silicon Valley as well, the cartel there. And since we're on the subject, go and follow us on Rumble. We actually have a LotusEaters.com Rumble account, which we'll link in the show notes, that we get good views on the podcast, but not on the clips for some reason. I don't know why.
I've just gone to check out Donald Trump's speech as well on Rumble. It got 800,000 views so
really?
Far.
That's good.
It's still going up. And what is that, like 2 days ago it was uploaded?
Yeah. Right, okay, that's good. But yeah, go follow us on Rumble, of course, if you want to use alternatives to the Silicon Valley oligopoly. And naturally, the Democrats purging and persecution of MAGA and Trump and his movement is going on unabated. Now they're going to be going after Trump Inc. So the Trump Organization could face criminal charges in New York next week because why not?
Something to do.
Yeah.
Let's just kill him. Why? Orange man bad.
Yeah. Well, it's going after as much as they can to make sure this never happens again, basically, because they don't want their power and hegemony being challenged. And this, I think, is the reason that Giuliani got suspended from practicing law in New York State. So he lost his New York law license. This is the guy who broke the mobs, cleaned up New York, did a good job as mayor, and now they're like, yep, well, you were on the wrong side of what happened. And therefore,
the power struggle in which the elites sided with each other to get rid of the only person who was challenging them.
Looks that way, yeah.
Do you need a better example of the fact that Donald Trump is on the outside of the elites than what's been done to him?
Yeah. And Giuliani chose his side, and Giuliani chose the American people. And Trump chose the American people, and the American people show up in unprecedented numbers to his rallies, and it couldn't be any more night and day.
Who's excited to go to a Joe Biden rally?
Well, who goes to a Joe Biden rally? Joe Biden doesn't even have rallies. Joe Biden has very, very stage-managed events that nobody turns up to apart from his own staff. But anyway, yeah, so that's what's happening there. Hopefully Trump comes back and does some good. Hopefully Rumble takes off as an alternative to YouTube. I mean, you know, we're on it. I know that everyone else is on it as well. It's just that people aren't using it en masse like they are with YouTube, which is a shame, but what can you do? You've got to go where the people are.
All right, let's go to the video comments.
As per the question of whether or not Jordan Peterson believes in the existence of God, he stated in his conversation with Jonathan Peugeot that he's caught in between two difficult-to-believe propositions, one of which is that the life of Jesus is metaphysically true, and the other of which is that it is untrue and just made up by people, despite all of the insane moral, psychological depth to it and its connections with various facets of reality and other thinking. He's not necessarily convinced that the latter is any more likely than the former, so he remains caught between the two.
Hmm. Interesting.
Was Jesus real or not?
There were many people called Jesus who claimed to be the Son of God. There is at least one other Jesus in the Bible called Jesus Barabbas. Barabbas means son of the Father in Aramaic.
The Jesus, the guy. Like, I'm not saying were his miracles true, but was the guy real?
There were loads of people called Jesus who claimed to be the Son of God.
All right. So?
So, yes. Plurality of Jesuses. And that's you know, like, it is not an uncommon thing to go back to the early centuries of the sort of 2000, of Anno Domini onwards and find prophets. These are 10 a penny. All over the place, especially in the Middle East.
But to say that particular one, I mean, who knows?
And Jesus is a Hellenization of Yeshua, which is, it also means Joshua in English. So there are an unbelievably large number of people called Yeshua who claim to be prophets.
All right, then.
So, yeah. One of them's bound to be like the Jesus in the Bible.
Whether or not he actually did anything is a different story.
Oh, well, yeah. It's down to faith, isn't it?
Let's go to the next one.
Good day, Lotus Eaters. I'm wondering if you ever heard of or are on the way of including the book Shake Hands with the Devil by Romeo Dallaire. I think it's very important to cover such book because it pretty much shows what happens when you have French and Belgian influence on a country and the overall tragedies that have come from all that. And it is a first-hand account, too.
I have never heard of that book.
I didn't get the name. She cancels the devil? What was it?
Shake Hands with the Devil, I think
Shake
it was.
Shake Hands with it. Ah, okay, by Romeo. There we go. Yeah, I'll put it in the list.
Okay.
Let's go to the next one.
Weirdly enough, as far as fighter jets go, you can't buy American, but you can buy foreign. You can't actually privately own a MiG-21.
This is Biden's America.
Oh, thanks for the public service announcement. Any Americans watching, you have your orders. Buy American F-15s one.
Buy British. We'll sell you planes.
Hey, Lotus Eaters. I am in this weird situation where I'm running for office right now, and I'm at the same time trying to start my own business. And I've been thinking about this, and I just want to ask you guys, what is the one thing you could tell yourself, let's go back to 2015, 2016, what would you tell yourself then if you had the ability to do it now? That's all.
Oh, God. I mean, if it's about politics, it's going to be about what's going to happen in 2020, isn't it?
Well, yeah.
But as for business advice?
Yeah. Unfortify the election. Unfortify the election. I don't know, actually. Business, I mean, I suppose set up a contingency plan in advance, because it would be useful to have a method of income that is not dominated by the Silicon Valley cartel, frankly. 15.
If it's 2015, for me personally, it would be start a LISA, just if I wish I'd done it sooner. Right. For anyone watching who doesn't know what a LISA is in the UK, get it. Totally worth it. As soon as you turn 18, I think it is, you put £4,000 in. I'm not being paid to say this either. It's just a fantastic scheme to get money out of the government that you've already given to them. So you put £4,000 in, and they'll give you £1,000 for free from the government, guaranteed, you know, return of 25%. And the catch is you have to spend it on a house or a pension. Okay. Either one. And you're going to buy a house eventually.
Yeah, I'll get a house,
I mean, even if you can only put like £500 in as savings, you get, you know, 100 and whatever, £25 back for free. So it's just a great thing, and I wish I'd done it sooner.
Right,
okay. Because, again, I mean, you're not getting money. You're getting your money back from the government. Hmm. So, I mean, take as much as you want.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
On Friday, y'all were told that Americans are only allowed to own tanks if the main gun is disabled. That is only mostly true. It is possible for the average citizen to have a fully functional tank if they either register the main gun as a destructive device or have an FFL that enables them to own unregistered destructive devices.
Right, you know what you're supposed to do then. How many people can own a tank in our audience?
Which is a tank?
That's a great question. How much is a tank?
Tanks USA.
I mean, it must be like, you know, I know that they've got thousands just rusting in the deserts.
Yeah, like Russian tanks must cost nothing.
Yeah.
A thuppence, maybe. I don't know. So you can buy a T-34 in England for £120,000.
It's not even that much.
Ooh, they do get a bit expensive for the more modern ones.
Sure, I would imagine.
Was it? Oh, no, that's 32,000. What? Kind of £32,000 for a recovery tank.
Well, cheaper than a car.
Well, cheaper than a Tesla, maybe.
Yeah, exactly.
What would you rather have, a Tesla or a T-34?
Well, it depends how I'm getting to Congress, doesn't it?
I don't see any American tanks being sold in Britain. I don't know about the situation in the US, but that's a life goal.
Right, okay, next.
G'day, gents. Three things. Number one, thanks very much for the vote of confidence, Brittany. Really appreciate it. Glad you like the story. Please leave a good review. Secondly, Carl, in my first novel, Final Flight of the Ranagar, that's basically the story arc that a group of kids get exiled and have to experience real life outside their comfy bubble world. So, touche, man. Mm. And secondly, thirdly, if you want, I'd be happy to put an affiliate link on my website to the Lotus Eaters. Let me know if you'd like that, mate.
Sure.
Yeah.
We'd appreciate that.
Don't know why I complain about that.
Yeah. Thanks.
Hey, guys. Check this out.
A fjord?
For people listening, he's just showing us like the natural beauty of Norway.
I mean, don't get me wrong, it's gorgeous.
Very nice, huh?
Yeah.
That's nice.
Does he always work on ships? Because that's a pretty sweet job if it is.
Yeah, it looks like he's got a pretty good gig, doesn't it?
Yeah.
That is a very nice view.
God, I showed you earlier, what is it, Dan Lyman from InfoWars is in Switzerland.
Hmm.
And he's been doing like videos of him diving in and whatnot to the water. And God, Switzerland looks fantastic this time of year as well.
Hmm.
Kind of very jealous.
Sorry, speaking about Hegel is repetitive. However, there's something that I don't understand. The dialectic developed by Hegel is referred to as the OS of the left since the 1800s in James Lindsay's video. This is a method of thought where the abstract meets the negative and produces the concrete, or thesis, antithesis, synthesis. How is this different from the dialectic used by historical philosophers like Aristotle? If not, then what does it mean by the dialectic? And why is the synthesis of Hegel's dialectic always some form of communism?
Right. There is no way I can answer that just as an off-the-cuff comment, because I'm going to have to go and spend a lot of time working on this. And this is next on my sort of list of intellectual projects to conquer. But the result of that will doubtless be worth your time. I haven't got the answer yet.
I have no opinion, because I hate philosophy. So
that's interesting. Hegel's got just a baffling way of looking at it. He thinks that history is the history of ideas, and it's always the essentially as if
someone comes up with a thesis and then comes.
Yeah, but the framing of it is almost like there is this idea, and then someone sees parts of the idea, and then you compare those parts with the negative parts to form the synthesis that moves on to the next stage and of the idea, which again then is. But I haven't, like I said, I'm not an expert on it yet, so I'm not going to try and give an answer. But
any other time I've encountered that was Caesar from New Vegas trying to explain that to me.
Yeah.
I was just like, skip.
But the thing is, he's trying to arrive, or he thinks he's going to arrive at a point where there are no more problems, where all of the problems have been solved in this one great idea that arrives us in utopia. And it's like, okay, that sounds exactly the sort of thing a German would say, right? Yeah. And it's obviously wrong.
We could stop at the first criticism, yeah. Where it's just like...
But it's so obviously wrong. And Marx obviously wants to reverse this and turn it on its head, as James Lindsay describes it, and it's just like, you're okay, but why take a premise that's so obviously wrong and work on it at all? You know, why do anything with it? Because that's obviously not going to happen. We're not going to arrive at the end of history in a perfect utopia because of Hegel's throbbing brain. It's not going
to
happen.
That criticism. It's such a German solution to things.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, we'll just find the perfect answer. Yeah, it's all systematized.
Exactly. If it's systematized and it's all, everything is essentially deterministic. So everything's contained within the premises as it goes along. So it's like, okay, but that's not true. And it's obvious nonsense. But yeah.
Anyway, should we go to the comments on the site? Do you want to read them?
David says, afternoon, gents. This Patel plan for moving the asylum's applications looks amazing. Hopefully it means we only get the good ones soon. If it lasted a generation, do you think the UK's attitude towards asylum seekers would change towards a positive outlook and be a net benefit for both natives and asylees?
If the asylum seekers majoritively, you know, 90% or whatever, become people who genuinely deserve it, and there's all these chances are gone, then we'd start liking asylum seekers again. Yeah. The reason the public attitude is so soured on them, I mean, it's in a small time as well.
Yeah.
I mean, you think in like the 90s or whatever, the talk about asylum seekers there is now was not there because the type of people applying for asylum was not there.
Yeah.
And today
it's people like Salman Rushdie.
Yeah. And today it's an absolute mess. And that's why there's such rhetoric about the asylum seekers.
Yeah. I mean, the phrase obvious chances is totally apt. Carbohydrate Crusader says, God, I hope Patel manages to get those plans through. Well, how could she fail, really?
It's this week they're voting on it?
The Conservative Party would have to turn on her plans for it to fail.
Which I'd like to see them try.
I mean, I'm going to be quite critical of those Conservative MPs that vote against it.
I'll campaign to get rid of them.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the Conservatives have got such a colossal majority at the moment. It's amazing they just every day just do something crazy, crazy, and the Labour Party just screeching and... You know,
well, don't do anything crazy. Just do something sensible and get rid of the Labour crazy.
Okay, but that, from the perspective of Labour, that's the crazy.
Yeah.
But anyway, on a side note, Robotic Hancock has never seemed more human than when he's having a cheeky squeeze of a lady's behind. Almost sad to see the useless tyrannical tosser go. Nah, I'm glad he's going. I think Priti Patel is trying hard as she can to start this migration nonsense, though it can't be easy when the Home Office is full of leftist snakes trying every trick in the book to go against her. Yeah, that's true, Sardoc Spamfish.
Trying to make them do their jobs.
Exactly, that's the problem. The institution itself is fundamentally opposed to what she's trying to achieve.
Because that's the weird thing. I see so much hatred for her not being able to have solved this issue already, and I get it. I get the complaints, but you put yourself in her shoes and what you can and actually can't do. It must be a mess.
I mean, the Home Office is staffed by people who are actively trying to cover up child rape gangs and who actively do their best to stop a report from being released about this subject. So, like, trying to get them to be like, actually, maybe the illegal immigrants shouldn't be coming here. I mean, they're in favour of it. They're totally in favour of it.
It's not just her. I mean, like Liz Truss and Kemi Badenoch sort of tag-team the Equalities Office. You've got Priti Patel and the guy, I can't remember his name, the Minister for Immigration Enforcement, mm-hmm. who are both fantastic. I think I've shown you before. Mm-hmm. The Minister for Immigration Enforcement, I can't remember his name, please look him up. He literally talks like Nigel Farage. It's so good.
Good.
Like, he's solid on the points.
Good. Matthew says, does it sound like Priti Patel is using the Trumpian idea to keep migrants out of the country until they determine their identity or if they're eligible for asylum?
Yes, and that's the correct solution. That is how you get proper migration systems for asylum seekers.
And that's how you know you aren't getting, I don't know, jihadi terrorists. Mm. Finn says, talk radio yesterday was on about the UK underestimating EU migration statistics, legal migration, by 1.6 million. We don't even know how many are in this country legally. That's true.
I've seen that, yeah.
Caffeinated Sentry Gnome says, Australia had onshore detention centres, then SJW stood around protesting all the time, and the detainees started burning them down and stitching their mouths together. Oh my God. The problem went away when they were sent offshore. Good.
Yeah, well, the same things happened here. They burned it down after leftist protests.
Yeah, they did, yeah.
Didn't get any mouth sewing, but...
No, thank God. Eric says, I think it was either just some human rights counselor at the UN or someone from the Red Cross, Save the Children or some of such organization, who critiqued the decision of making a Rwandan migrant center, calling it a regrettable development that could lead to a race to the bottom when it comes to human rights for migrants and refugees. Well, then stay in France, I guess.
It's that simple.
Yeah.
I don't know why it had to be Rwanda. I would have thought the British government would have gone with Ghana or something like that. Someone in the West African coast who would have been more, you know, suitable, let's say. But the Danish had already gone to Rwanda and done the talks, I guess. So
which country would be the scariest?
Yeah, Rwanda. You want four-star hotel? Well, you're not getting it. You're getting Hotel Rwanda.
I mean, imagine, you walked all the way from Orion thinking, yeah, I'm going to get some taxpayer money. This is going to be great. I'm going to get put in a hotel. They're going to give me money. And then you find yourself in the jungles of Rwanda. I mean, there are still bone fields there.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I take it that's another example of hose mad. And of course, nobody in either the UN or those in charge of the organizations are offering their houses for these poor migrants and refugees. Yeah, well, that's the thing. It's always for thee and not for me when it comes to the governments dealing with the migrants. If Ian Blackford would like to take some of the migrants, I support and endorse his decision. I think those migrants should be allowed to live in his house. 100%
to Scotland. That's fine. Fine by me.
Yeah.
Send them all to Glasgow. Enjoy.
Might be safer to send them to Rwanda. George says Hancock shouldn't have resigned. He should have been fired. Yes. Boris, including his Hancock sleeve, which I think is a euphemism for Gina.
That's horrible.
Boris, being the same type of adulterer, protected his degeneracy in the insane COVID restrictions. And that's the thing, right? I don't actually care about the adultery, right? I mean, it is obviously morally wrong, but like, I don't care about Hancock.
There's a complexity here. So with Hancock, it's full adultery. There's no strings or anything there. Mm. With Boris, I think it was a open relationship he had with his wife when he was mayor. And that's why it was a bit like, what the...
Yeah, not very conservative.
Yeah, because I heard a story once in which there was someone with him in the mayor's office, and it was some newspaper had called out the mayor's office and be like, Boris, we've got pictures of your wife sucking off a banker. And he just responded on the phone, what? Bloody well, hope she enjoyed it. Just hung up. Because it's just an open relationship, so he didn't care.
Right, like, okay.
They divorced later on when he got his new girlfriend.
But George says, can we have some wholesome leaders like Elizabeth II, assuming direct control and absolute monarchy? I'm sure it'll be less tyrannical than what we have now. No, I don't think that's going to happen. Tyler says, I can't believe after all the human rights violations and dodgy contracts, Hancock got lambasted for having an affair. Well, I mean, he did break COVID social distancing guidelines. Mm. Had sex with someone he wasn't in a household with. So, I mean, I guess. Omar says, I can't really pinpoint the exact time I stopped caring about COVID, but between the elite displaying flagrant disregard for their own rules, inconsistent or nonsensical policies, and some large gatherings being more infectious than others based on politics, I find it hard to care regardless of what propaganda they put in front of me. That's a really great point, actually. Especially you can go to the pub as long as you have a substantial meal. Really, COVID cares about substantial meals, does it? What's the rationale behind this? COVID's like, well, I mean, he's only having a pint.
That's the rule for being 16, isn't it?
Yeah,
like, you can have a pint provided you have a roast dinner.
Yeah, yeah, it's really weird. But he says there's also a really weird cult around deifying nurses and doctors, but nothing for delivery drivers, shell stackers, or literally anyone else who kept the country running. Yeah, and more importantly, like, we're not being tyrannized by the delivery drivers, shell stackers, or anyone else, because it's not mandatory that I eat at their place, but it is mandatory that I pay for the NHS. So these people who have got a monopoly on my money when it comes to healthcare are sitting there saying, now, worship me. No, I'm not going to do that. Is there a defining moment for either of you two that made you go, this is concerning, to F this, F the lockdown, and F you too? No, I'm actually very much with you on this, Omar. I can't pinpoint exactly when I stopped caring, but it didn't take too long. And I mean, I remember having a conversation with my neighbor back in like, it was in the summer, so it must have been like June, July last year, where I was just like, look, this is basically over and I don't care about this. And I don't think the government should be able to do this. So at least over a year now.
There was one moment that made me burst out laughing about the whole thing, though. Mm-hmm. It was when they first introduced, was you had to wear a mask if you went to a restaurant. Well, I think the restaurants were open. And I went to a McDonald's and I walked in without a mask. And this McDonald's in Reading is tiny. Mm. Like, literally, you walk in and there's the table, like, right next to you. Two steps. And I got shouted out by some McDonald's employee being like, no, you've got to wear a mask. And I just laughed and walked off. I was just like, no, come on, this is just too stupid. And then when it got, you know, more and more enforced, I was just like, oh my God, really?
Now,
like,
we literally have to.
People aren't thinking, are they?
Yeah. Jay says, finally Hancock is gone. That man was definitely a man who should be kept away from power. In the past, he was pushing for mandatory flu jabs for state school pupils back in 2019. I didn't know that. Given the fact that this experiment vaccine was barely a year of development to verify if it actually works without causing a lot of side effects, I'm loath to think if it had his way, complete control would be forced everyone under the age of 18 to have the vaccine, etc., etc. Well, I'm very concerned about that as well, to be honest. Awkward Motion says, here in Oz, there is only one person in ICU with COVID. Sadly, it seems though the New South Wales Premier has folded and now locked down much of the state. I want out of this madness, but I'm not even allowed to leave. Yeah, it's insane what Australia is doing about COVID at the moment. Like, I just can't get over it, but we're running a bit low on time, so I guess we'll move on to the next section. And then we went, since they haven't broken up properly. Marcus says, I saw an article from the AFP. AFP? What's AFP?
I don't know. I think that's a news outlet.
Right. Claiming that Matt Hancock was stepping down from his position because of his handling of the fourth COVID wave. Bro, the entire world knows why he's stepping down. Who are you trying to lie to?
French press.
Right, okay. I didn't realize there was a fourth COVID wave. Is that the Delta variant, is it?
Who cares? I don't keep up with any anymore.
I mean, literally, the death rate is minimal.
Yeah, I'm getting, because you know I signed up for YouGov to try and influence their things if that ever happens.
Yeah.
And I keep getting surveys that are like, are you keeping up with the COVID stuff? What do you think of this variant? Just every answer, don't know, don't care.
Ghost of Adelaide says, Australia's state premier seems determined to make Australia the most authoritarian country in the Commonwealth, and the PM doesn't even seem to notice. My state of South Australia brought new restrictions in today, even though we have no cases at all, and the other states are locked out. Do you think we could surpass Britain with regards to COVID-inspired lunacy? Yes, actually, yes, you obviously have. I mean, at least we had COVID in Britain.
That was a prerequisite for government tyranny.
I mean, I don't agree with what the government did, but I mean, at least we had COVID cases. If you have no cases and you are locked down, that seems ridiculous. Can we get an Australian correspondent? A disproportionate number of viewers seem to be Australian. Maybe. We'll see, but I don't know.
Should go there at some point.
Well, we're not allowed to go there.
Yeah, no, at some point, being very broad term.
I don't know. They might turn around and lock everything down and then you won't be allowed to leave. Yeah. And then we'll be stuck.
In 2025.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't you know about the gamma variant?
I mean, we're literally not allowed to go there at the moment anyway. So, and the Australians won't accept you if you do.
Maybe Zeta Eta variant by then, wouldn't it?
Anyway, Anthony Parrish says, the worst thing about Matt Hancock is there are two women who are willing to have sex with him. It's weird, isn't it?
Hancock's got two. I've got none. What's going on?
But just... Like, I don't know. I just can't.
But like, both of them. Well, I mean, the aide's not great, but like the wife's not that bad either. It's just like
they're both fine looking women for their age. They're both in their 40s.
Yeah.
And I guess we should be thankful that Matt Hancock is interested in adult women. I suppose.
That's a low bar.
Yeah, it's a very low bar. But I mean,
for a global elite, he likes adult women. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. I mean, Matt Hancock, as far as I'm aware, didn't go on Epstein's plane. So you know. That's you know, has an affair with an adult woman.
And that's why he's lost his job.
That's probably true. That's the thing. Like, both of these women are perfectly attractive women. Surely they can do better than Mac Hancock. Yeah. Free Will says, Invasion of the Body Snatchers. Matt Hancock's pod malfunctioned and he was not cloned properly, so his double cannot imitate him accurately. Exactly. What the hell is going on? Like, honestly. Drew says, okay, Matt, all we need to do is cry on camera when William Shakespeare gets his second jab. Can you do that? Sure, I can do that. Quick question, though. What is crying? Israeli Crusader says, I disagree, we should have cameras on every politician 24/7. And then they might actually stop being honest. I mean, as good an idea as that is, I'm not actually sure it's a great idea to make sure that...
Nah, come on, that's great policy. Just outside of the DOD and the Cabinet Office, but everywhere else, Boris Stream.
Sure, that would be interesting, I'm sure. But I don't see it working.
Come on, at least MI5 can set them up, and then we've got them as records. Like, we won't make them public or anything, but at least they're in the archives. Mm. Just in case.
Matthew Wilson says, funny how 10,000 hours of COVID riot video, Capitol riot video, is under lock and key, despite the US government claiming it proves the insurrection narrative, yet 30 seconds of secret parliament video can get released like a bullet aimed at Matt Hancock and no questions are asked. Yeah, it's really weird. The it makes it seem like a setup, to be honest. Like, as if the conservative government themselves are like, look, Matt, right, what we're going to do is say you're having an affair with Gina. You're going to go out, you're going to have a kiss on the camera, and then, for whatever reason, I don't know what the reason would be, like, but it looks like a setup.
Interesting story. So I believe it was George Osborne who had dirt on everyone in the cabinet back when he was there, and then that was how he kept his power. He's just like, oh, I've got something on you, and if you go against me. Yeah. And I wonder if it's the same tactics keep going on, and they've been sitting on that for a long time, and it's looking real bad, him clinging on, and they're just like, right, let's get rid of him. Leak that.
Could do, but I mean, Boris could just fire him at any point because he's a member of the cabinet.
I know, but it's great to have something so bad that you can just boot him. And then no one in the party can complain. No one in his faction can complain.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But that's the point, isn't it? That's why it looks kind of staged. You know, like, what's they're doing? What, you know, there are massive questions to answer about how a secret camera arrived in a cabinet member's office. Mm. Like, you need to know who those people are. Like, could that be Russian agents? Could that be Chinese agents? You know, could it be French agents?
No, best.
Who knows? But they're all equally as dangerous, and we need to root this out and get a hold of it. But instead, everyone's just like, well, you know, it's just a camera. It's just there.
I mean, best case scenario, it's MI5. If it's not,
yeah, exactly. Best case scenario, it's our own. You know, but that's the point. The Boris administration would be like, okay, we need answers. Chris says, I cannot understand the amount of cognitive dissonance in the world at the moment. Matt Hancock cheats on his wife during a period where he can jail you for sleeping with someone, yet he desires privacy for his family. Yeah, as if his family wants some privacy with him. I mean, his wife's probably just like, Matt, just get out. You know, like, I mean, what a piece of crap as well. Burst home, by the way, darling, is going to be a huge scandal because I was kissing my secretary, so we're over, and I'll go tell the kids. You asshole. You know, at least...
Although I do love it. It's like, you know, the priests, whenever no one's looking, they're like downing cock because they're mm-hmm. like that. And I want to, like, you know, imams who are like, oh, thou shalt not, blah, 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 and then they're out, you know, in the strip clubs.
Yeah.
You know, like the 9/11 terrorists. Yeah. Same thing, like Imam Hancock over here, he's banned Tinder and all the rest of it. Like, he's out cheating on his wife.
Yeah. Literally banned sex. And then, like, I mean, you did, like, though, Matt. You actually had COVID Sharia. Like, come on. But it's like the climate activists lecturing us from their private jets and luxury golf courses. Yeah, it's exactly what it is. It's just insufferable. I'm just going to reload my thing. So do you want to go through a couple of comments while I reload the page?
Whether Trump is back.
Yeah.
So Shaker Silver, I don't think Trump's online return and entry onto Rumble should be received as a glorious, but rather than a, well, it took you so long enough, he dragged his damn feet hard when it came to supporting new tech and actually threatening the big tech oligopoly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true.
That's totally true. Even though a year from now he was getting censored by then and 6 months ago he was outright banned. And I have a feeling that the neocon crowd he unfortunately surrounded himself with was a massive deterrent. Yeah. Yep. I mean, him hanging on to be like, I'm going to get my Facebook account back.
Yeah.
That's got to be the neocon crowd around him being like, come on, they'll be reasonable.
At least he didn't start a cameo, I guess. Sorry, Nigel, but it was not on, mate. Not
Big
on you.
Chungus.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. We don't need Nigel Farage's dispatches on Big Chungus. I mean, thank God he was on GB News this weekend.
Bosh, stay away.
So yeah, exactly. You know, like, no, you've got a certain level of dignity, Mr. Farage. You campaigned with Donald Trump. You should be on the TV rather than on Cameo.
Student of History says, it is for you, the American people. Sir, could you just pull a flaming sword out and proclaim the Imperium of Man already?
Why not?
Return of the King, indeed.
Yeah, well, that's how it feels, you know, it's very much. So white hot peppers. Hey guys, sorry about blabbing on and on during the Zoom meeting. That's fine. Completely even forgot to ask my question. That's all right. We're just happy to hear from what things are like inside the military. Would be honored if you guys want to do a one-on-one call with me. Feel like I could convey how deep the rift is in the military. I have so much rolling around in my head. I'd love to talk to you guys about any questions you have. Maybe you can help me with my question. So the question is, I've thought about getting hold of Project Veritas, but I'm not really sure how to do it. I have so much say and so many PowerPoints from training that I have no idea how to organize it and give it to them in a way that would be presentable. I have so many different things, I wouldn't even know where to start. What do I do? Should I start with the food thing from DC, or maybe the extremist training? We get it's extremely one-sided, or how since the first day since I got back to base training, you can just feel the rot in the army because of the sexual harassment training we received. Basically, it's the training that pounds the idea if it's a female and male are alone together for even a second, that with that male, he rapes her. So Matt Hancock's sweating now. Not only is he getting fired, but he could be facing rape allegations. Which, I mean, just think about it, Gina. It's so unbelievably toxic. I have so many male officers, soldiers that I would trust in my life. But when we receive this training every few months, the officers are giving the training drill into my head. They're going to rape me the first chance they get. I feel completely buried in this information. Where do I start? I don't know. I mean, we could start...
we'll publish it.
Yeah, we could get the team on it and publish it ourselves.
Yeah, we'll just go through your stuff. I mean, organize it so it's for a human to look at and not, you know, all over the place, because that makes it more difficult. But like, here's the thing, here's the argument, blah, blah, blah. And you could do like a series of articles of just like, US military says that if you have sex for a second, you're a rapist or, you know, whatever else.
Yeah, we'll put you in contact with Hugo, Josh, and...
Roy.
That I don't know why his name completely... Oh. I literally had it on the tip of my tongue well, and then it just evaporated.
Then if you want to talk to Project Veritas, because they're, you know, US-based, it'd probably be a great thing to be able to send over to them and be like, here's the explanation, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, no, that's a great idea. Ignacio says, are you aware of McAfee's and McAfee's guards and family saying he was not suicidal? Yep. I've been seeing some posts suggesting the Miami building that collapsed had a flat owned by him, and supposedly it stored a lot of information that was to be released if he got Epstein'd. Yeah, I heard the same thing, but I have no idea whether it's true or not. I've not spent any time trying to confirm or deny.
There's a lot of connecting dots there.
But.
I'd like to see the lease. Because if there's a lease that he owns one of the flats, then okay.
But. Yeah, exactly. I. If people want to send us the information, feel free. tips@loadseeds.com, and we can pass it and see if there's anything real about it or whatever. But I haven't been able to confirm or deny it so far. Resolute Observer says, recent clip on Twitter regarding Nova Scotia in Canada, their stance on social gatherings. They don't want people gathering to talk against the vaccine caught on television. So literally, they're like, people are going to conspire against the vaccine. It's weird. Alex says, a little off topic, but I last commented last week about Catholic churches being burnt down on indigenous land in British Columbia after the discovery of graves at former residential schools and the poisonous coverage by the Canadian media. Well, colour me surprised if they haven't suddenly found more unmarked graves and more churches are getting burnt to the ground. The worst of it is that the Twittersphere people are actually saying the arson is a good thing and seeking to blame the Crown. Historical ignorance is shocking in Canada, the result of an extremely left-wing education system for many decades and left-wing media who aren't interested in telling the truth. So I don't really know what has happened in Canada. I'm aware that, like, you know, 400 and 700 mass graves of children were found at these care homes where the children were being taken from their parents to be integrated into Canadian education and society. Honestly, it seems kind of horrific. So I'm not surprised that it's easy to paint as being horrific, but I can't really comment on it.
No, I don't know much about it either, to be honest.
Doesn't sound good, though.
No.
Apparently this happened in the 70s. So. Justin says, hello, you heroes. You just keep getting on better. Well, thank you very much. What could we do about the term politically correct? It bothers me no end because it implies it's right in some form when it is seriously just cowardice and lying to oneself and everyone else. Well, that's the question, is it? Whenever someone says, oh, that's not politically correct, demand to know what the correct politics are.
Well, that's not what I get from the term either. When someone says that's not politically correct, that means it's true. Because politically correct is in and of itself, the term politically correct means false, but politically correct.
Yeah.
So it is what the political class want to say is true, but it's not the truth.
Hmm.
that term in my head. That's all it means.
Yeah.
So whenever someone uses that term, that's what I think.
But demand to understand what the correct politics are, because politics is a necessary contingent thing. Because politics itself, just the nature of politics, is about the management of power. The management of power is something that can only be done a posteriori. You don't know where power resides. It doesn't reside theoretically. It resides in reality, and you have to be understanding the landscape, the lay of the land, to see where power lies. And so there, you know, you can say, well, it should be this way. It's like, but according to what? But according to your best wishes, I guess.
In a more foundational way, when someone says, for example, talking about the rape gangs in Britain is not politically correct. Yeah, but it's true. Like, that's the point.
But that's the question, though. How is it the correct politics requires us to not talk about this terrible crime?
Mm.
Anyway. CRT and trans issues have started becoming a thing in Norway this June. No one has heard about it or protests, so I'm thinking about swooping up all the craziest people I can find on social media and present their bullcrap on Instagram so my friends can see where this ends if this kind of people get their way. What's your thoughts? Lots of love for Norway. Definitely do it. Make sure that people are well aware that, you know, what's going to come their way, because it's going to be exactly the same as what you have in the Anglosphere. It's going to be exactly the same. And Mary says, Callum, what was the title of the book you talked about that goes over the Chinese Cultural Revolution and mentions how during the resulting famine people ended up eating toddlers? I've been trying to find it, but I need the title. It's Mao's Great Famine.
Frank Decotta. That's the one. I can't remember the page number. It's quite late in the book in which he's talking about cannibalism, the difference between people eating, corpse eating. People eating, you kill them. Corpse eating, you eat the corpse. And overwhelmingly, it's corpse eating that happens in famines. And in the case of China, because the famine kills the elderly and the young, you end up eating kids, and that's what people did. They ate their kids.
Yep. And it's awful.
Yeah. But you think, I mean, how many toddlers do you have to eat before you think socialism's evil? And for me, that was the point. That was the point where I'd always been a bit like, yeah, socialism's awful. Getting through that, yeah, socialism's awful, and then you get to the eating toddlers, and you're like, nope, these people deserve nothing. Absolutely nothing.
The worst part about it was the fact that initially they'd had a bumper crop as well. So at the very beginning, they'd had this massive increase in rice and grain yield. And so they were wasting it. They were just
throwing it down the toilet. The sewers were filled with rice.
Just eating like 5 meals a day. And Mao was like, yeah, eat 5 meals a day. Why not? It's like, yeah, because there's long-term consequences to this. And it turned out to be like a two-year-long famine or something like that. It was horrific. Absolutely horrific. On that note,
if you want to eat toddlers, subscribe to Novara Media. But if you don't, go and sign up to LotusEaters.com. That's a hell of a segue. In which you want to preserve not having to eat your own children because of socialist nonsense. Go and check out, as I mentioned, the Ji Yun Park interview. That's fantastic. Go and check out the Contemplations and the Epochs we have on there as well that went up over the weekend. Otherwise, we'll be back tomorrow at 1 o'clock UK time. Thank you and goodbye.